So today I'm happy to have two principals from charter schools in Hillsborough County. Amy Sams and Kawanda Lawson are two phenomenal principals at charter schools in Hillsborough, which is Tampa. And they have had a lot of drama over the last couple months working with the school board. So we want to talk a little bit about the politics of charter schools in Florida, implications for other places around the country. But first, welcome, ladies. I really appreciate your time. I know school just opened, so this is I'm asking a lot, so I want to say thank you for that.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share.
So let's first talk about your schools. I know you guys run two phenomenal schools, and I want you the chance to brag a little bit about. So Ms. Lawson, we'll start with you. Talk about Woodmont Charter School.
Woodmont Charter School is a Title I school in Temple Terrace, Florida. Our expected enrollment this year is 850 students. We are a great school with great kids. We have parents who do support our school, as you can see from the renewal. We had a lot of parents who came out and supported us and made sure that the school board knew that, you know, this is where they wanted their kids. They weren't taking their kids to a district school. This was their choice school. We have a lot of activities for our kids. We have sports, we have basketball, we have football, we have soccer and volleyball. So we have outreach programs. We are partnered with Mission Hill Church and Contagious Church that are, you know, our partner churches who bring us food drives that we have quarterly. And then we have a book bag drive that was just done yesterday where Mission Hill Church bought us 50 book bags to pass out to our students. We get a wealth of supplies, school supplies from the parents and from, you know, our community partners. So we are just a school here trying to do our best to make sure our kids get the best education possible and are ready to matriculate to the next grade next year.
And so you're K-8?
We're K-8 school, yes, sir.
Okay. And Amy, why don't you talk a little bit about South Shore Charter School?
So like Woodmont, we are also a kindergarten through eighth grade school. Our inspected enrollment is 1140. Currently, we're sitting at about 1050. But we do have several parents who were on a wait list this summer. So we're offering those seats and expecting our enrollment to climb up. We are not Title I like Woodmont, but we do service 74% minority students in our school. We also offer the sports like Kuana mentioned at Woodmont. We have flag football, volleyball, basketball, soccer. We have a plethora of clubs that are being offered this year. We have a painting club, creative writing, journalism, student government, course and music club. And then we'll be adding cheerleading this year.
So in Florida, the only authorizer for a charter school is the local school board. And obviously that sometimes can be a challenge. You always hear around the country people saying it's sort of like asking McDonald's to authorize a Burger King next door. But talk a little bit about, you know, you were authorized by the Hillsborough School District. You got ready to have your contract renewed. I read the staff recommended that your contracts be renewed, but then the school board said no. So talk a little bit about that. How did that happen? And from your perspective, why did it happen? Either one of you.
I know what happened was we had an audit at the end of your 5 years. We had an audit. So originally they told us, you know, we met with the district staff personnel and they went over what they would be auditing us on. And they gave us like a checklist of everything they would be looking for when they came into the schools. So we went through the checklist and made sure we had everything that was required. We had to do show evidences, show proof of, you know, these things from the last 3 years. Back. So once we got the checklist done, different departments came out and they did an audit on my campus, like finance came out, human resources came out, different, you know, ESE came out from the district and they checked off and made sure that we were in compliance. And then after they left our campus, we had a overall Zoom at the end. And each department would say, okay, this is what, you know, what, where we find you, this is what's needed, and, you know, we can move forward here, there, whatever. So after that was done, we got, I got paperwork back, or the contract back stating that, you know, this was fine, we were good, in good standing, they were going to recommend us to the school board for our charter to be renewed for 5 years. We went to the school board meeting with the understanding that we were good, that everything was fine. We'd already passed the audit. We had already did everything on the checklist. We looked good. We thought we were in good standing. when we got to the school board meeting, and Amy and I were sitting right next to each other, and we're kind of like taking it all in. One school after another were getting denied. We were like, okay, well, what's going, you know, it just seemed to be a trend when the schools were getting denied for one thing or another. And it didn't seem to be valid, in my opinion, because they would say like a school was having financial trouble and they were in the red 3 years ago, but they had been put on an improvement plan by the district and now they were no longer in the red. They were making progress, denied. Okay, but if they were making progress, why are they being denied? You know, so when it came to Amy's school, because they went in alphabetical order, Amy's school got denied. I'm like, oh, my God. And the things they were saying about both schools were just not true. And you at the school board meeting, you don't get a chance to defend yourself. You sit there and you listen to them tear your school down. They say all of these things that are inaccurate about your school. And you sit there and you listen. And it's like heart wrenching because, you know, that's not true. For example, they talked about my school not having an ESC teacher, not having gifted providing services. That wasn't true. We had a gifted teacher on staff. She provided services to our kids. We were not out of compliance. If we had been out of compliance, we wouldn't have gotten the recommendation for our school to be renewed. You know, so a lot of the things they were saying, it was like blowing our minds because we knew that wasn't true. But that wasn't a place for us to have a chance to, you know, speak on our behalf. So that's how it unfolded, at least for me.
Mine was very similar. You know, the school board came out in the spring and we went through the checklist with them. There were a couple of things that they pointed out. We rectified those, provided the needed documentation within a couple of weeks, and they updated the status of the checklist to say that we met all needed requirements and that they were going to recommend us for a full renewal. So we went to that board meeting fully expecting to be renewed. And like Kiwanis said, when the meeting started, they had just countless people from the community who were there saying all of these negative things about charters in general, and not really even, some of them were directed at our schools, but they were inaccurate, but some of them were just directed at charters in general, which to me seemed very unfair because then they were kind of lumping us all together. And I know that charters across the nation exist for different reasons and that not every charter school has the same, you know, setup. And then when they did start denying the renewal of some other charters in our county, like Kiwana said, it was just crazy because they were referencing things that our schools were not being found guilty of. For example, the finances. South Shore has no financial issues. And yet we were being lumped into that category. They were saying that, you know, we didn't meet certain qualifications when in fact I had documentation where they had checked off that we did meet those qualifications. So it was almost as if the school board were looking at a different checklist than what was used for the actual audit process. And so that kind of, you know, took me aside, like what are they actually using to judge me? And that's what it felt like, was truly judgment. Because I just joined the school in March when the previous principal retired before spring break. And then I came after spring break. So I was trying to play catch up for the past few years. And they were making accusations that just were completely unfounded. And so it began a process of me doing a lot of research to compare my school to the surrounding district schools. And one of the things that the school board kept saying that I found interesting is they would make the comment about how they needed to do a better job of making sure parents in the community knew about the district schools that were highly rated in place of the charter schools that were poorly rated. But the data that I was pulling showed that I actually had higher scores than some of the neighboring district schools. So again, it was like inaccurate or unfounded accusations that they were throwing at us. So the whole process was mind-boggling.
So it's different. It's always challenging to read people's minds. But is it fair to say that this is probably a political decision, that they had made a political decision that they wanted to shut down charters? And then after they made that decision, they started making up stuff to sort of rationalize their decision. Again, we're trying to read people's minds, but from your perspective, is that sort of what happened?
That's how it appeared for sure. The the board would make statements again about charter schools in general and not necessarily just about our schools. And so they were lumping us all together. And, you know, that's not fair. Every school has its own personality. Every school has its own strengths and weaknesses. And so they definitely seem to be taking a political approach. And the school board itself did not seem to be in unison. So one person on the school board would point out weaknesses of charters in general, while another school board member would point out other weaknesses, and they seemed to almost contradict themselves. And a couple of school board members seemed to be in favor of charters and tried reminding the other board members, you know, that we need to be careful about pointing fingers because our schools themselves are not perfect. And so the division among the school board was even a little surprising to me. It was definitely not unanimous, although it did seem to be heavily lopsided against us. There were a couple of people who were in favor of us, so they were not 100% in unity themselves.
So I used the example earlier of asking a McDonald's to approve a Burger King moving next door. Is that kind of what's going on here? When you ask school board members to approve charters, oftentimes they see it as competition, and they don't want the competition to exist. So they're trying to eliminate the possibility of competition. You know, I don't want a Burger King next door, so I'm going to deny them the ability to open up. Is that part of what's going on here?
And that's exactly the way it felt. Like you said, we can't read anyone's mind, but that's exactly how it felt. You know, they were in competition with us, and they needed their students back so that the funding would go back, so that they can come out of the red, you know, for all of the bad decisions, poor decisions that have been made in the district over the last 10 years, you know. And Amy and I had nothing to do with that. We were just newly gotten here. And our schools were financially sound. So when they talked about those things, it did feel like you're saying they needed their kids back. And it was stated, the school board chair stated that standing to the podium, that they needed to get their kids back, you know, for financial reasons. So, yes, that was it.
For our national audience, the Hillsborough School District several years ago entered into a partnership with the Gates Foundation to do a fairly comprehensive teacher development initiative. And they got $100 million from the Gates Foundation, but they had to match it with a lot of money on their own. And they eventually ended up almost bankrupting the school district because they spent way more money than they had, made way more commitments than they had. They overstaffed the organization, and they've been struggling ever since to try to avoid basically bankruptcy. That's not the right term, but that's pretty much what they've been struggling with. So I think part of it was your guys were collateral damage. You know, as they're struggling with their own finances, which, as you said, has nothing to do with you, but because they're in significant financial problems because of decisions they made in previous years, that's caused them to, I think, to make decisions that maybe not necessarily in the best interest of kids or the community because they're struggling with their finances. So the school board decides they want to crush you guys and want you to go away. Then what happens? What happens next?
What we're doing now is like triage. All of a sudden, they realized that they had not given us enough time to do the 90 days notification that they were not going to renew our charter. So now we're going, I guess Amy and I are okay because we've already been approved for our 5-year charter. But now we have to have, at my school, we're doing every 3 weeks. Someone is coming out to check on us and make sure that we're in compliance. They will send us a list of things that they're going to check for when they come out. Like my first one was last week with ESC, and the ESC compliance person, first we did a Zoom and we talked about what she was going to look for when she got here. And then when she came on campus, she met with my ESC staff, myself, my gifted teacher. She met with everyone to make sure that what we talked about previously during our Zoom was what was on campus, what we had in place. She made sure we had the correct forms in place, the documents, how to conduct the meetings, who needed to be at all of the meetings, you know, looked over the targeted roster for our ESC kids, everything, you know, what IEP meetings needed to be held. That we had coming up. So she did things like that. So she'll come back, or someone will come back every 3 weeks until December so that they can check off that they've been on our campus. Prior to that, I'd been here a year, not quite a year and a half yet, but nobody from the district had ever been on campus, you know. So now they're trying to play catch up and show that they're on our campus and that they're supposed to be doing. Because it was my understanding that the school board kind of turned, like Amy said, on themselves, on the superintendent, And saying that, you know, you had not been out to these schools, you had not done your job. So now they're getting bashed for not doing what they should have been doing all along. So now the new schools that are coming up for renewal, they're going through a process now of having to provide all of these documents and having people on campus and, you know, getting ready for what Amy and I have already gone through.
So I want to step back a little bit, though. So the school board rejects your contracts. But there, as you mentioned, Ms. Lawson, there was a problem where they violated state law by not giving you sufficient notice. And so talk about what the department, how the state responded to that and how they sort of stepped in to try to help you out.
So the state commissioner issued a formal letter to the school board and gave them 10 days to rectify the situation because they had violated statute and threatened to withhold funding if they did not. So that began a series of additional board meetings. Some emergency board meetings took place. You know, they continued to hear public comment. So once again, Kiwana and I had to sit through a couple more board meetings where our schools were being verbally attacked and lied about. And we just had to sit there and take it. Meanwhile, the analogy Kiwana used a minute ago about triage became very true because from week to week in between these board meetings, we had to hold together our staff and our families who were now questioning, you know, am I going to have a job in August? Where am I going to send my students to school? Do I need to be trying to enroll them somewhere else? And so Kiwana and I were very distracted from our normal summer tasks of preparing for the coming school year because we were, you know, caring for our families and staff. And I love to care for my families and staff, but it was a constant email, phone call. And of course, I wanted to answer each of those personally. So the distraction was great. It did impact our ability to hire some teachers because some people were leery of joining us for fear of what might come next. It did impact our enrollment because some families, you know, didn't want their kids to start with us and then have to be uprooted if we did lose the renewal. So it was a distraction, truly a distraction all summer. And I felt that was unfair. That was part of, I think, the board at the state level coming down on the local school board and saying you didn't properly use the 90-day notification and now you've left these students in limbo. And that, I think, was one of the reasons the state reacted the way they did to the local district.
And the local school board eventually capitulated to the state when they had renewed your contract because they had violated basically state law in terms of how they had proceeded. But now you're being sort of micromanaged. As you were talking, I'm thinking, you know, I'm the IRS. I'm here to help you kind of thing.
Yes.
So you're kind of being a little bit harassed, I guess, would be. Is that fair? Is that too strong a term, or you think that's fair?
It's a strong term, but it does feel a little bit intrusive. I welcome people to visit the school. I don't have anything to hide. I don't think Woodmont has anything to hide. They're welcome to be here. But for staff and families who, you know, don't understand everything that went on behind the scenes, when they see them constantly on our campus, I think it unnerves them a little bit and creates a little additional stress for them because they don't know why they're being so closely watched. So it just, you know, adds another layer to the culture that Kiwana and I have to manage. And that's challenging. But I'll do what it takes to, you know, to support my school. I will say also that, like she mentioned a minute ago, I did have district staff who were part of the renewal process visit the school a couple of times in the spring, but not a single person from the school board ever visited my school during this renewal process. And when I first joined the charter schools as a employee back in 2016, I went to another school that year was going through its renewal, and all of the board members in that district visited my school before the renewal vote. So when none of them visited me this spring and then voted against me, I found that to be alarming because, again, they were making their assumptions or their judgments without any personal eyewitness of what actually goes on in our building. So I'm happy to have visitors here. I'm not hiding anything, but I wish that the visitors were not just compliance officers, but also the board members, just to come in and see the positive atmosphere that is occurring and the learning that happens in our classrooms. The last 2 days, I've helped my enrollment staff do the warm body count that we have to do the first week of school. And I have been thrilled to see that on day two, I walked into a third grade classroom and they were already doing a lesson where the students were at the whiteboard themselves interacting about place value for a math lesson. And we were on day two and three of the school year and we're already talking about place value. So I know that the learning is occurring and I wish the board would come and see that.
I agree with Amy. Like I said, one of the board members came the week before. We had invited all of them, but only one came the week before we actually went to the board meeting. But that was, like I said, the whole year that I'd been here, no one had been here before. And when I asked other employees who had been here before, they were like, no, they don't come. And the only time that I can remember in the year that I've been here that a district person came out other than, you know, the ESC people or speech or, you know, or whoever they send from the district to service our kids here was on the first day of school last year. I had someone from the district who came out to support our first day, you know, and she stayed a couple of hours that morning and then she was gone. But that was it. So I didn't have that luxury either. And I know my compliance was the biggest thing that they said about that was disheartening about my school and about Amy's was the ESC program that we were not servicing kids. And it was crazy because a couple of weeks prior to the board meeting, I had received this certificate award from Hillsborough County thanking me for doing such a good job with the ESC department. I'm like, how did I get the certificate? If now, you know, it just didn't match. It didn't make any sense to me. So it was just crazy. Even during the pandemic, I got lauded in the newspaper for having ESC services during a pandemic, you know, so twice I had been recognized here at Woodmont, the same school that they were trying to shut down for the services I was providing for my ESC students. But yet again, you know, during this board meeting, we were slammed for not servicing our kids.
So let's talk about how you guys have navigated the pandemic. How are you dealing with it today? You know, Florida, like of other states, is immersed in this debate about mask versus no mask, you know, blah, 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 blah. How are your families responding? How are people adjusting? I'm kind of curious, what's the attitude, you know, at the school level? There's so much at the political level, you know, it's all this rhetoric and blah, 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 and everybody's threatening to sue everybody and et cetera. But what's it like in the real world? What's it like in the schools? How are families and kids and administrators and teachers, you know, what's it all look like?
It looks like a normal school year for the most part for me. I mean, we have some students who wear a mask, some students who don't. All of the teachers wear a mask when they are interacting with the students, especially when they're interacting up close. But the kids are just so excited to be here. I've yet to have a single kid make any negative comment about why are you wearing a mask or you not wearing a mask. They are pretty fluid at just accepting the fact that some people do and some people don't. And they're just happy to be here. They're all, you know, open house was full and you could see friends and parents hugging each other and so excited to be back together. And countless parents have inquired about the after school clubs and the sports. They're wanting school to get back to normal. They want their kid to have that regular learning environment.
And I agree with Amy. We had open house for 2 days. We split our school. So K through fourth came on one day and then fifth through eighth came on the second day. And both days we had about 400 families and the families were, they came with arms loaded with school supplies and, you know, getting information from transportation and food services and karate and aftercare and, you know, buying the car tags and they were excited to be here. And we have been just moving along like a regular school year. Nobody is questioning, do we have to wear the mask or not wear the mask? Those parents who want the kids to wear the mask, they come. We keep masks, a supply of masks at the front desk. So if a student comes and they want a mask, we give it to them. So we haven't had an issue. The teachers are wearing the mask. Teachers, faculty, staff members are wearing masks all day, every day, you know, when they're interacting with the kids. And for the most part, the majority of my kids are wearing masks as well.
real quickly before we end, I want to talk about a future. I mean, where do you see the charter school movement going in Florida? You both are sort of veterans of this movement now. And where do you see sort of innovation in education going? I mean, what are your schools going to look like in 5 years? What will be better? What will be the same? Just give us a sense of, you guys are sort of on the cutting edge of both politically and pedagogically. You've been right there. So what can you tell the rest of the country in terms of where the charter school movement's going and where pedagogy is going in places like your schools?
The thing we have that's from the top down is defeat the gap. Defeat the gap. There's been a huge gap at my school. Our kids were already extremely low. And then the pandemic hit, and that didn't help at all, because virtual learning for low kids is just not the way to go. So when they came out this year, when they had all of the principals come together and the theme was defeat the gap, I loved it, because it's our focus is now on one thing. What are we going to do? How are we going to make sure that all of our kids are successful? What is it going to take in each of our individual schools? All of us are different. My school is totally different from any other school, I believe, than any other school in the network. And I'm sure Amy feels the same about her school and other principals as well. So to defeat the gap is the one way we all come together to focus on the innovation. You know, what are we doing with technology? What are we doing with curriculum? What are we doing with the resources that we have, whether it's a paper resource or it's a human body? How are we going to use all of the things that we have in our building to help our kids to be successful? How are we going to network between our schools? How are we going to network with principals and assistant principals and our deans and get everyone together, teachers together? We just had our returning teacher orientation where we get everybody together and make sure the teachers know what they are supposed to do, what their expectations are, what we're going to be looking for when we're in the classrooms, what we're holding them, you know, accountable for. And then the second week we had the returning teachers to come back, and they are the veteran teachers, and we're pairing those teachers with the new teachers and making sure that we are, you know, catching teachers who may get a little frustrated because they're new to the system. So we're working hard.
So for my school, defeating the gap is obviously important as well. And one way that we've approached that is to change some of our staffing. So we have 3 staff positions this year that last year we did not have. 2 of those positions are curriculum coaches, or we call them CRTs, curriculum resource teachers, and they support our teachers to make sure the teachers have access to all the resources that are needed. They can go in and co-teach if it's a particularly challenging class period. And then we also hire an interventionist who will be pushing into especially the 3rd grade, which is the first year of standardized testing in Florida. And she'll be pushing in to support small groups of students with their reading and math skills. So we did not have those positions at South Shore last year. I added those this year to be sure that staff and students were receiving the support they needed to focus on that gap and how we can defeat it, and to make sure that the data is being analyzed and then used to address the needs of our school.
Well, that's all very inspiring. By the way, we should have mentioned that as part of your renewal process, after the school board voted no, and there was all this drama after that, your families came out massive. I mean, they really stood up for you. Hundreds of families showed up at various meetings, wrote letters, emails, calls. It was really inspiring to see your communities respond. So that's a tribute to you guys and your staff and your leadership and your families, that they fought for themselves, and at the end of the day, they prevailed. So I think that's important too for people around the country to hear, is that your folks didn't take it laying down. I mean, your family said, this will not stand, and they got up and they fought for themselves and they fought for their kids. It was an amazing thing to see. So I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that your families are fighters. And that's part of the way you're going to overcome the gap, is they're fighting for their kids. So that's important.
And I want to point out that the families did a great job of defending our school. But Kuwana and I both had students who spoke at some of these board meetings. So yes, the adults stepped up to the plate to defend school choice and parent choice, but our students did as well. And they had no problem standing in front of the state board at the state meeting to say, don't close my school. I love my school. This is what my school has done for me. And so our students, you know, they showed a very mature attitude in this whole process, and they understood as best they could what was happening, and they wanted to be part of that fight as well. And that was encouraging to me, to see those young people take some ownership in their school and to be part of that process of saying, this school is best for me, please let me stay.